as we've seen, it's not actually called a sutra in Sanskrit. Nonetheless, the text opens just like a sutra. We're told that the Buddha was staying in Amrapali's park, the park donated to the Buddha by Amrapali, the famous courtesan of Vaishali, after she became the Buddha's disciple and became a bhikshuni. And this park was situated on the outskirts of the city of Vaishali. And the Buddha was dwelling there. He was surrounded, we are told, by a numerous assembly, an assembly of arahants, bodhisattvas, brahmas, and other non-human beings, that is to say, gods and deities of all kinds, as well as monks and nuns, bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, laymen and lay women. And on that occasion, we are told, a bodhisattva, the bodhisattva Ratnakara, came from Vaishali to visit the Buddha with no less than 500 Lichavi youths. The Lichavis were a tribal people whose capital was this city of Vaishali. It was one of the most important centers of the Buddha's teaching in the days of the Buddha himself. So along comes Ratnakara, the bodhisattva, with these 500 Lichavi youths to see the Buddha. And these youths, we're told, bring with them and offer to the Buddha some 500 precious parasols. Parasols, by the way, in India are not just utilitarian, in ancient India that is, they are symbols of sovereignty, in this case of spiritual sovereignty. So they bring along these 500 parasols, all of which are made of the seven precious things. After all, you're in the world of the Mahayana Sutras now, and things are usually made of the seven precious things. So they offer these 500 parasols to the Buddha, and the Buddha, on the spot, by his magic power, transforms them all into a single, enormous, precious canopy. And this canopy, we're told, covers the entire billion-world galaxy. And in it, as you look up, all things are reflected, all worlds, all beings. In the whole galaxy, they're all reflected in that great single canopy. And Ratnakara then praises the Buddha in a very beautiful hymn. After that, he asks the Buddha to explain the bodhisattva's purification of a Buddha field. How a bodhisattva purifies a Buddha field. How he builds, as it were, a Buddha land. And it's this which will be the theme of our second talk, a talk next week, on building the Buddha land. Incidentally, in this series, I shall not be trying to give a systematic account of all the teachings contained in the Vimalakirti Nirdesha. This couldn't possibly be done in the course of eight talks. I'm simply going to take up a few themes for consideration. And I've selected these themes more or less at random, in accordance with whether I felt I had something to say on them. In chapter 2, the scene shifts to the city of Vaishali, and we meet Vimalakirti himself. He's a great bodhisattva, even a Buddha, but he lives just like an ordinary layman, lives at home. Seems to have a family, seems to have a job. But all this is simply his skillful means. He outwardly adapts himself to people simply in order to be able to approach them and to teach them the Dharma. And this sort of skillful means will be the theme of the third talk, which will be on being all things to all men. So out of this skillful means of his, Vimalakirti falls sick, and all sorts of people come to see him, and he teaches them the Dharma. In chapters 3 and 4, we are back in Amrapali's park, and the Buddha suggests, he just sort of throws out the suggestion, that someone should go and call on Vimalakirti and ask how he is getting on. The Buddha first asks the arahant disciples, beginning with Sariputra, to go and call on Vimalakirti. And then he asks the Bodhisattvas, beginning with Maitreya. But all the disciples, strange to say, are quite reluctant to go and meet Vimalakirti. And the reason is that they've met him before. They've encountered him before. And he's given them, it seems, arahants though they were, bodhisattvas though they were, he's given them a very rough time. He's exposed the inadequacies of their approach to the Dharma. So, in view of this episode, the fourth talk will be called The Transcendental Critique of Religion, single inverted commas. In chapter 5, Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom, agrees to call on Vimalakirti, and with a large portion of the assembly, he sets out for Vaishali. And on his arrival in Vaishali, on his arrival at the house of Vimalakirti, he is of course lying on his bed, a really vigorous sort of ding-dong dialogue takes place between the two, between Manjushri and Vimalakirti, each trying to give the other a real dialectical, transcendental hammering. But they're very evenly matched. So this little transcendental sparring match over, Manjushri asks Vimalakirti why he is sick. And Vimalakirti gives that very famous reply. He says, he is sick because beings are sick. He is sick out of great compassion. And he also explains at some length how a sick, inverted commas, bodhisattva, that is to say a bodhisattva who is sick because beings are sick, should control his mind. So in this chapter, as well as in subsequent chapters, we find Manjushri and Vimalakirti face to face. Manjushri, of course, is a mythical figure, the Bodhisattva of Wisdom. Vimalakirti is a historical personality. So the fifth talk will be concerned with history versus myth in man's quest for meaning. Chapter 6 deals with the inconceivable emancipation itself. In this chapter, Vimalakirti, by his magical power, transports 3,200,000 lion thrones from the Buddha land of the Buddha Meru Pradipa Raja, which is innumerable Buddha lands in the eastern direction. And all these thrones, these 3,200,000 lion thrones, which are apparently miles and miles high, are all quite comfortably accommodated in Vimalakirti's house. This magical feat demonstrates to us the absolute relativity of space. Space is only a concept, just as time is only a concept. And having performed this magical feat, Vimalakirti describes various other magical feats which the Bodhisattva, who lives in the inconceivable emancipation, is capable of performing. In chapter 7, Manjushri asks Vimalakirti how a Bodhisattva should regard all beings. And Vimalakirti replies. At this point, a goddess who lives in Vimalakirti's house showers the whole assembly with heavenly flowers. And a strange thing is noticed. These flowers do not stick to the bodhisattvas. They just touch them and drop. But they stick to the arahants. And Sariputra, who is of course one of the arahants, tries to brush them off because he's a monk and monks are not supposed to wear flowers. And then a dialogue ensues between Shariputra and the goddess. And the goddess explains the great and wonderful characteristics of Vimalakirti's house.